And we're holding page 72 in Sota, Ois Hey Aleph. Continuing on the story of the Meraglim, the Pasuk says that they, after Kolev tells them, look at all the things that Moshe accomplished for us, then the Meraglim replied, saying more bad things about Eretz Yisrael, and the Pasuk says they claimed Eretz Echeles Yeshveh Hahi, it's a land that eats up its inhabitants. So in other words, they're saying that it's a dangerous land and people die over there. Dorash Rava, so Rava Dash and Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that at that point Hashem says, Ani Chashavti L'Tova, I planned this for the good. Yes, they saw people dying over there, but I actually planned that for their benefit, as the Gemara is going to explain, Vehem Chashavu L'Ra, but they took it the wrong way. In other words, Marashah explains we have to say there's some truth to what they're saying, otherwise Yeshua and Kolev should contradict them, just like they did with the other things that they said that are lies. So they said when they said Tova Sa'aretz Ma'od Tova Aretz Ma'od Ma'od. So we learned about yesterday. Marashah says that other Meraglim were claiming that Eretz Yisrael only has fruits that are not Chaye Nefesh, that it doesn't have the staples like wheat and barley and olives. And Yeshua and Kol reply Tova Aretz Ma'od Ma'od. The land is very good. It does have all those things. And the same way with other claims that they made that Yeshua and Kol contradicted them. So if there was no truth to this, then Yeshua and Kol also would have called them out on it. So the implication is there is truth to it, but they took it the wrong way. Ani chashavti l'toiv. Hashem says, I planned it for good. D'chol heicha d'motu, wherever the Meraglim would come, ma'is chashiva didhu. An important person from that area would die among the Knanim. Ki heicha d'litudu. This way, each place they go, the Knanim are busy with their avelus and with all the ceremonies for the person who died. V'lov d'shilu abasrayu. And that way, they're not asking too many questions about these strangers who are wandering among them. So that was Hashem's plan, in order to keep the Goyim distracted, and meanwhile they took it badly to claim that Eretz Yisrael is a bad place. The Ikadamri, another version, it wasn't that every place they went there was an important person that died, but rather Iyov Noch Nafshe. At that time Iyov died. Now Iyun Yaakov points out the Rashi mentions on the Pasuk based on the Medrash that was actually part of their job was Moshe asked them the Gemara mentions it in Baba Basra that when Moshe asked them Hayesh Bo'etz, are there any trees in Eretz Yisrael? Now if he's asking them whether it's a fertile land of course is going to have trees. So what does he need to mention that? So it means he's asking them whether Eov, who lived as long as a tree, the Pasuk says after all of Eov's troubles, after he davened for his friends and Hashem restored all his fortunes and doubled them, etc., he lived 140 years. Since everything that he had was doubled, then we understand that it means that his years were also doubled compared to what he had before. So he had 70 years up till that point, and now he lived another 140, which makes 210. So Moshe is telling them, this man who lived as long as a tree and who protects the people of his generation like a tree, is he still alive? So now they're saying that, yeah, so now they found he had died, and his chosim aren't protecting the Knanim anymore. The Gemara there in Baba Basra has several different opinions. When Eov lived, so our Gemara is following the opinion that he lived in the times of Moshe. The Gemara says there that Moshe actually wrote Sefer Eov. And the Gemara brings an opinion that Eov lived, taka, as long as from when the Jewish people came into Mitzrayim until they left, which indeed is 210 years. Anyway, so the Ikadamri, Eov Noch Nafshe, so Eov had died at that point, V'itridu Kola Amma V'hespede, and everybody is busy with the Hespid for him, so again, that way they're not focusing on these strangers walking around among them. V'heim Chashavu L'ra, but they claimed it for bad, Eretz Echeles Yeshver Hahi, that it's a land that devours its inhabitants. So in other words, they weren't Dan L'Kaf's Chos. Now, a couple of them before should talk about, so one point is that so Marshall says that maybe in fact they Taka didn't realize that it's that specifically that Eov had died. They thought, and maybe what it is they saw wherever they go in Eretz Yisrael, people are making a spade, and they thought it must have been many people, and really it was only the one person that Eov died. You have also, Marshall mentions when the Pasuk says, when Yeshua and Kolev are trying to convince the people not to listen to the Meraglim, and they tell them, Sor Tzilom Me'alehem, Rashi brings on the Pasuk, that it means their protection has departed from them, meaning now that Eov's dead, then they have no more tzaddik to protect them, so therefore they should be easy pickings for us. Anyway, so a couple of them first we talk about, again, first of all, yes, they did have maybe a slight excuse, the fact that they did see that they were Hespedim wherever they go, but still, again, first of all, they should have been Dan Lepaf's host. The very fact that they knew Hashem had promised to bring them to a good land, Yaakov points out, that itself should clue them in that this is not exactly what it seems and they need to think into it further, and the fact that they didn't is why they're guilty, is why we can consider them guilty. H. Yosef makes another point as well. Here you have, nobody is dying until they come into a town. And then you have, it's Dafka, the important people. And in any place where the Meraglim weren't, there were no deaths. So therefore, they should have clued them in that there's something unusual going on over here and that Hashem is doing it for their sake.
If they are not there, how can they know?
They could ask around, let's say, or whatever, but whatever, that's the point is. Actually, what he says is, b'derech le over a meraglim le nimtzav le, yeah. So, in other words, yeah, we're, only where they were going is there, they can tell that, yeah. Ben Yehoyada makes another point as well. If it was a natural kind of disease, usually those kinds of things hit the poor more because they live in cramped conditions and they don't have as good food and so forth. Here it's Davka the Hashuvim that are dying, so therefore that should have also clued them in that this is not a natural thing and this is Hashem is doing it for their benefit. They have the explanation of Yixidus that they say Eretz Echeles Yeshveh is the point that they're saying it's going to devour our Ruchnius and we're not going to be able to serve Hashem in the way that we do in the Midbar and therefore we're not going to and we're going to end up therefore they wanted to stay and they wanted to stay with their avoda of the type in the Midbar and that was their mistake as talked about in Lukut Torah as we've talked about the last couple of days. They continued, Vanihi be'enenu kachagrovim. They said, we were like grasshoppers in our own eyes. V'chein ha'yinu be'enehem, and that's how we were in their eyes. So, Amar Mesharshia, Meraglim shakori havu. The Meraglim, in that, are outright liars. Because how could they say that? Fine, to say that we thought of ourselves as grasshoppers compared to them, fine, they can know what they themselves were thinking. How are they supposed to know? How the Kananim look at them that they should be able to say such a thing? And in fact, Marsha says, again, following his shita that we learned about before, that they were not even in Hebron, which is where the giants were. So fine, Yeshua and Kalev didn't call them out because at least they could say we knew about the giants because Yeshua and Kalev reported to us. But this, v'chein ha'yinu b'neihem, how could they possibly know? But the Gemara answers no, v'loihi, that's not so. There could have been a truth to that. Ki havu mavru aveli, because as we just said, whenever they went in Eretz Yisrael, there was mourning going on, and part of the mourning is there's a sudas havra. So you have that in halacha. The Knanim, of course, are not following the halacha, but nevertheless, I guess it was a common minhag in those days that you would have a suda after the burial. They would have a suda out in public, and they would do tusi arzi havu mavri lahu. They would have the suda savra after the burial. They would have it on. They would have them under cedar trees. So, kibin de chazinu, now when the meraglim saw the people over there, solok b'ilana, then they would climb up the trees so they're not going to be seen by the people. Shamu de ka'amri, and they can overhear the Knanim saying to themselves, ko chazinu inchi de domo l'kamsi b'ilani. We see people in the trees who look like grasshoppers, because that's how they were compared in size to these giants. So there is a truth to it that they can say we were like grasshoppers in their eyes, because that is in fact how they looked. There is a different girsa that says that actually that Rashi mentions it according to one girsa and Rashi on the pasuk that they said that the Knanim were saying we see ants shaped like people. So ants are a lot smaller than grasshoppers. How does that fit? So there's an explanation actually that what it is when they were up close they would see them as grasshoppers. When they're further up in the trees, as we're saying, hiding out in the trees, then they'd appear to them even smaller like ants. Next, so the pasuk says, "Vatisa kol ha'eda," the entire congregation of the Jewish people lifted up their voices. Vayitnu eskolam, they raised their voices. Vayivko am b'laylo ahu, and the people cried on that night. So, what's the significance of that night, and why does it have to mention ha'om that the people cried? That night was the night of Tisha B'Av. The Gemara elsewhere calculates the Meraglim left on Choftes Sivan. the calculation basically is, you have in this week's parasha, it says that they left Har Sinai on the 20th of Iyar. Then they took they were traveling for 3 days, and they reached Kibrus Hatava. They spent a month over there, because Hashem says you're going to have enough meat to last you there a month until you get sick of it, etc., etc. So they stayed there a month. Then they went to Hatzeres and came there a month later, Chavei Sivan. At that point, Miriam got Saras, and she was quarantined for 7 days. So Chavtes, she was done with that. And then they went to the next place, for to Midbar Paran, and to Kodesh Barnea, and that's where they sent the Meraglim from. So the Meraglim left on Chavtes. Then the Gemara elsewhere explains that that year Tammuz had 30 days. So therefore, he had two days of Sivan, Chavtes and Lamed, 30 days of Tammuz that year, and 8 of Av, and they came back. They were away for 40 days, and they came back on Ches Av, and that night is the night that the Pasuk is talking about. So it was the night going into Tisha B'Av. The Gemara, in fact, elsewhere explains that because Tisha B'Av is a Yom Muchan LePoronos, because it's a day that's destined for tragedy, therefore Hashem, to begin with, arranged that the moon's phases should be just such, that year Tammuz would end up having 30 days. Otherwise, it wouldn't have worked out. Anyway, so Amar Rav Bachon, Amar Reichon, Oysa Laila Leil Tisha B'Av Hoya. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says, Heim Bocho B'chiyah Shal Chinam. They cried for nothing over the report of the Meraglim. V'ani Ekba Lahem B'chiyah L'Durus. And Hashem says, I'm going to make that on that date, they're going to have crying in many future generations. Because you have the five tragedies that the Mishnah mentions that happened on Tisha B'Av, as well as several later ones in Jewish history. Notably, it's well known that the expulsion from Spain was on Tisha B'Av, the outbreak of World War I was on Tisha B'Av, so it's not just the five things in the Mishnah. The point is, now first of all, Maharsha points out, you don't really have it explicitly in the Psukim there in Chumash Bamidbar, but you do have in Tillim, in Kapitel Kuf Vav, when it tells over about all the different times that the Jewish people angered Hashem in the Midbar, so it mentions, after the Meraglim, by Yisa Yod Elohem, Lahapel Oysam Bamidbar, Lahapel Zaram Bagoyim, Ozaroysam Baharotis, that at that point Hashem swore that the Jewish people in the future are going to be divided, are going to be scattered among the nations. So it was all a result of that. There's other details in it as well. In fact, Maharsha points out, you know, they themselves were Perseach Pela Sutton. They themselves said, what are we going into Eretz Yisrael for? And we're going to end up being killed over there. Nashenu v'tapenu yulavaz, and our children are going to end up being preyed on by their enemies. Hashem is saying, you know what? That's not going to happen. Your descendants, that is in fact what is going to happen to them. Even they said Nitna Rosh and Ashur Mitzrayimah, you had that after Churban Bayis Rishon, after everybody left, after the remainders who were there left after Gedaliah ben Achikam was assassinated. So it's all hinted at in the Pesukim in Parshas Bamidbar, and you have in Sefer Tillim, it says it more explicitly. So Eum Yaakov points out this is not the only cause of the Churban, but the point is, in other words, that once Hashem decided there has to be a Churban, then he made it that that's going to be on that day, Tisha B'Av, both times. The Maharal makes a point, actually, like this. Yitzias Mitzrayim was a transformative thing in the sense, he makes a point, especially in a Sefer Gvuras, in a Sefer Gvuras Hashem, that Yitzias Mitzrayim, it wasn't just Hashem took us out of one Golus, it made a permanent change. From then on, a Yid is intrinsically a Ben Churin, and there's no possibility for the Goyim to have full domination over us. I'll get it, like you have the expression from the Rebbe Rashab and the Friedrich Rebbe, that our bodies are in Golus, but not on Neshamas. That was brought about by Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now, the Maharal continues, had they been able to go into Eretz Yisrael right away after that, then it would have been that the coming into Eretz Yisrael also would have been a permanent thing, unchangeable, and there never would have been a Golus. Because there was this interruption, and they wound up having to be in the Midbar for 40 years, and it wasn't that generation, but rather the next one, therefore it ended up being only a temporary thing, and therefore, as the Gemara is saying over here, that left room for there to be a Golus in the future. The Gemara continues. The pasuk says, "Vayomru kol ha'edo lirgam oisem ba'avonim." After, say, Yeshua and Caleb try to convince the people that it is a very good land, and if Hashem is with us, then we're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and don't you worry. So the pasuk says the entire congregation threatened to stone them, to pelt them with stones. And then the pasuk continues, "Chuvayd Hashem nira ba'oil moed," and the glory of Hashem, the cloud, which always represents the Shechina, came onto the oil moed. So the simple meaning, in other words, is once the people saw the Shechina descending, then they stopped. They realized they'd gone too far, and they weren't going to stone Yeshua and call it anymore. But the Gemara gives another derasha, because it says, "Lirgam osim ba'avonim uchvayd Hashem." So it means, they actually took stones and threw them up at Hashem. So therefore, lugam osim ba'avonim, uchvoid Hashem, as if like they're so to speak, trying to stone the covered of Hashem himself. Now, how could they do such a thing? Are they so foolish as to think that they could stone Hashem? So there's a few different possibilities. It can mean, the Maharal says it means they were threatening to stone Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's the representative of Hashem to them, so therefore that would be tantamount to threatening to stone Hashem himself. Another explanation is that they were taking stones and throwing them at the Anani HaKavod, where again, the Anani HaKavod represent Hashem's Shekhinah, protecting the Jewish people, so like as if like in their frustration, they're throwing stones at that, as though it can do any good. It could even be, actually, some Mephoshim point out. It says, Vayomru kol ha'ed, they said to do it. So it's not even like necessarily they're physically picking up stones, but the very fact that they even had such an idea is al derech, like you have by Avodah Zorah, where it says that by Avodah Zorah, Hashem counts, machshava Avodah Zorah is counted like a maisa, so therefore it can actually be considered in a certain sense as though they actually did that. You know, if a person, for example, says a statement of Avodah Zarah, such as he takes an object and says Keliata, then yeah, there's no taking it back, unlike most things where a person can retract to the Dibur, yeah.
Let me ask you, it's very critical of the people at that point. Does that make sense? They were all tzaddikim.
They were all tzaddikim, and that's really, you know, when you look in particular, when you look in Likur Torah and Parshas Shlach, when Alter Rebbe starts discussing this point, yeah, I mean, they're the Dor Dea, they're the generation that received the Torah and had tremendous Giluyim. How could they fall so low? So yeah, you have the answer that it started with that they had their idea of the type of avodah that they thought they should continue doing rather than Hashem wants them to go into Eretz Yisrael and start a different type of avodah. And the point is, in other words, like we talked about previously, once a person starts putting in his own agenda into things, then it can start going, tackle from bad to worse until it reaches these kinds of things that we're talking about over here.
Physical level. It could have been that it was terrifying.
It was also terrifying. There was definitely that. Yeah. Yeah. The fact is, you know, the Gemara brings an opinion, the Mishnah and the Gemara in Sanhedrin bring an opinion that the Dor HaMidbar in Laim Chelek Lanam Abba, but then the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva says that, and the Gemara is very surprised. Shavki Rabbi Akiva l'chassid rusei. Rabbi Akiva, the great chassid, was always defending the Jewish people. How could he say such a thing? And the Gemara takes it almost as a given. Of course they have a Chelek Lanam Abba. There's even actually an explanation, I don't remember from who, that says when it says that they don't have a Chelek Lanam Abba, because they're higher than the whole concept of Olam Abba. So they don't need Olam Haba, they're on a higher level of course than that. And you have the story that I mentioned, and a story that I mentioned yesterday, from Baba Basra, where Rabbi Baba Chana sees them lying on their backs in the desert, and they look like they're drunk, and then one of the explanations is that they're drunk on Gili Elikus, Del Chagnod of an Aviv. So yeah, they were on a tremendously high level, but on the other hand, you know, they also, for that reason, their mistake could be all the greater. And we talked about also a number of other things that various darshanim throughout the generations have explained what the source of their mistake was. It was too much anava or too much gaiva or all kinds of different possibilities. Next, the pasuk says, "Vayamusu." What happened to the meraglim? The pasuk says, "Vayamusu ha'anoshim etzia diba sa'aretz ro b'magefa lifnei Hashem." The people who had spoken badly about Eretz Yisrael died in a plague before Hashem. Now, the expression Bam Magefa suggests a specific kind of plague. So we're not talking about that they just caught some kind of disease and died or something. And also, that's one thing, and also because it says Ro'a Bamagefa, which also suggests, in other words, that it's some kind of, that. So Rashi says, because it says Bimagefa, rather it says Bamagefa, which means in the plague. In Lashon Kodesh, when you have a Bez or a Lamed or whatever with a Shva, it means the equivalent of English, the equivalent of a or an in English. When you have a patach, it's the equivalent of the. Ba-magefa would be like beha-magefa, which means in the plague. So we're talking about some kind of specific known plague. Tosfos points out another point as well. Since it says ra'a ba-magefa, then we're meant to understand. In context, of course, ra'a is referring to their evil report, and ba-magefa refers to the plague. But since it puts them together in the pasuk, then that means, gives us a drasha, that the plague itself was something particularly evil. So what was it? So, Amar Shlokish, Malamacha Mesu Misa Mishuna. This means they died an unnatural death. There is, by the way, a sikha where the Rebbe talks about, you know, Moshe had just davened for Hashem to forgive the whole Jewish people. How come he couldn't daven on behalf of the Meraglim as well to spare them from it? And the point that Rebbe makes in a sikha is because the pasuk says Vayalinu Olavas Kol Eda. They caused the whole Eda to speak badly against Olav. Now the simple meaning of Olav means against Eretz Yisrael, but it can also mean Olav against Moshe. So at that point, then Moshe is not able to daven on behalf of the Meraglim alderach like in Kateger Nasas Aneger. Once they spoke badly about him himself, he doesn't have the ability now to defend them before Hashem. And by the way, we were just talking about how great they were. The fact is, actually, you look in at the end of the famous Sefer Megillas Tainus. At the end of it, there's a list of days. It's also brought in Shulchan Aruch in Erechaim Siman Tov Kopei. There's a list of days when tzaddikim and yichidis gula would fast, and one of them is according to different gusars, the 7th or the 17th of Elul, which is the day that the Meraglim died. So even though on the face of it, you should say they were Rishoyim and we should be happy that they're gone, but nevertheless it was sad because they were such tzaddikim to begin with, and the fact that tshuva was that they weren't able to do tshuva and save themselves from this. Anyway, so what exactly was their death? Omer Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dorash Rav Shila ish Kfar Tumarta, Rav Shila from Kfar Tumarta gave the following drosha. Melamed shenishtar Rav Lashonam, Hashem made that their tongues got unnaturally extended, the nafal al taburam, so that it reached all the way down to the navel. V'hoyu toloyim yotzim b'lashonim v'nichnasim v'tiburam u'mitiburam nichnasim b'lashonim. And then worms were crawling out of their tongues and going into their navels and back and forth, and that's what they died from. What's the significance? Nah, it's not funny. It's not at all. So the point is, in other words, that it would be. So the point is one thing. So it would be midah k'neged midah. So therefore, it involved their tongues because they spoke Lashon Hara, and therefore the punishment had to involve their tongues, Marsha explains. And then as far as the fact that it involved their navel, so Ion Yaakov points out the navel is the middle of the body. Eretz Yisrael is described as the middle, the center of the world. They had spoken Lashon Hara with their tongues about Eretz Yisrael, which is compared to the navel of the world, and therefore their punishment involved those two body parts with worms going back and forth between one and the other. The Pasuk even calls Eretz Yisrael Tabura Aretz, the navel of the world. Another point, the Maharal mentions that point, and he mentions another point as well, which is that the human body, the Gemara tells us in Nida, a couple of different opinions, how exactly the human body is formed in the womb. One explanation is that given that the unborn baby is connected to its mother by the umbilical cord, it starts growing from there. It starts growing from the navel and then grows outward from there, and then all of everything else grows outward from there. So in that sense, like the navel, therefore, represents the beginning of the formation of a person. The tongue, then, which is a person's power of speech, which is unique to human beings, that represents the totality, the perfection of what a person is. So it represents, in other words, from the beginning to the end of their metzios was all infested with worms, which represents decay and destruction because of the way they acted. So that's one opinion. Rab Nachman by Yitzchak Omer ba'askara meisu. Rab Nachman Yitzchak says a different explanation. They died of askara. Askara, Rashi mentions, is something that happens that comes for Lashon Hara, which is exactly what they spoke. The Gemara mentions askara in a bunch of places. It's some kind of disease that involves a swelling of the throat. And nowadays, in some places they translate it to diphtheria. Another possibility is it's a disease called quinsy, which is basically a big abscess in the throat. Whatever it is, the Gemara mentions in various places it comes for Lashon Hara, and it's a really horrible way to die because it cuts off a person's airway and so on and so forth. So Nachman Yitzchak is saying that's what happened to them. All of this was kind of a digression because we had mentioned we'd been in the middle of talking about the crossing of the Yarden in Yeshua's times. 39 years after that, then we mentioned the stones that Yeshua took, that Yeshua told the people to take from the Yarden to set up as a monument, and that then the Braisa that the Gemara had been quoting had said that each of those stones was 40 saw in size, and that caused us to digress into the size of the cluster of grapes that the Meraglim took, and therefore now we got into this whole discussion about the Meraglim. So now let's get back to the Brisis, which is all part of Tesefta, on this Masechta, which describes the details of how they crossed the Yarden. The context of it, again, is because the Mishnah had mentioned a number of things that have to be said. B'loshon HaKodesh, one of them is the Brachos HaKlolos, B'har Grizim, or B'har Evel. So therefore, so the Brisis are giving, the Tesefta is giving, the whole background, how did they get to B'har Grizim and B'har Evel in the first place to do the Brachos HaKlolos. So the Braisa continues, Kivin Sha'ola Achron should be Sioman Yardin. So we said before, so we left off that the Yarden water had split. We said there were different opinions how exactly it split. According to Rashi's way of understanding it, everybody agreed that the water piled up behind like an invisible dam, so to speak, and the question is only how high, according to Rabbi Yehuda, 12 mil, or according to Tosfos, a little over 12 mil, whatever, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, over 300 mil, and then Maharsha'ad understood Rabbi Yehuda's opinion to say not that it piled up 12 mil, but rather that it flowed backwards for 12 mil. Whatever the case, we said that happened as soon as the Kohenim, who were carrying the Aron, stepped into the Yarden. Now remember, they're crossing the Yarden from east to west. They're coming from Egra Yarden, which is east of Eretz Yisrael proper, into Eretz Canaan. So the Kohenim then had stepped off the east bank of the Yarden and stepped into the water, and at that point it split. So now the Braisa continues. The Kivin Sha'ala Achron should be thrown in a Yarden as soon as the last of the Jews came out of the Yarden, then the water right away returned to its place and continued flowing normally. Shenemar, as the Psukim in Yeshua describe it. When the Kohenim who were carrying the Oren of the covenant of Hashem came out of the Yarden, and Rashi explains at some length over here that it must mean necessarily, at least this is how the Gemara is taking it, that they came back onto the east side of the Yarden. Because what had happened is they'd only set one step into the Yarden and then it split. Now they're standing over there as everybody is crossing by. So even though now Rashi explains, since the Psukim afterwards say that the Oren and the Kohenim went in front of the people, so you can't say therefore that it would mean that so how could it be then? If they're on the east side of the Yarden, everybody's crossing from east to west, then how are the Kohenim going in front of them? So therefore we first said, it can't mean, Rashi explains, that they actually crossed the Yarden themselves on foot and now they're standing on the west bank and now they take one step and they're in Eretz Yisrael proper. That's not what it means. Rather, the Gemara is explaining that it means they came out of the Yarden, but Rashi explains, if you look at the Psukim over there, in Mukdum, Uchabat Torah, and it means that he's telling them to take one step backwards, back onto the east side of the Yarden. And as soon as they did, the Pasuk says, then the water continued flowing. Now the Pasuk says, as soon as the Kohenim who were carrying the Oren of the covenant of Hashem came out of the Yarden, taking one step backwards onto the east, Nitku Kapois Ragle Akohenim El Acharova, and the Kohenim's feet had just moved back onto dry land, then the waters of the Yarden went back to their normal place, and they continued flowing and filling up the banks of the Yarden as they had done the day before and the day before that. Nimsa, so it comes out now, so now it comes out that the Oren with the Kohenim who are carrying it are on one side of the river because they're on the east side because they just step backward one step there, and the Jewish people are standing on the other side. So now, how are they going to get across in order to continue leading the Jewish people? At that point, the Oren picked up its carriers and went across. So they don't have to carry it across and get their feet wet. Instead, the Oren basically flew them all through the air and they landed on the west side in front of the Jewish people. So now, Rashi explains, that's what the Pesukim mean, where it says over there that after all the people had crossed, then the Oren and the Kohenim went in front of the people. That's why, because they had to cross over, they had to be flown over the Yarden in order to resume their position at the head of the, column. As soon as all the people had finished crossing, then the Oren of Hashem and the Kohenim went in front of the people. So again, Rashi is explaining that even though if you look at the Pesukim, it makes it sound as though now that Pesuk comes before the Pesuk about them stepping out of the river. But Rashi says, so therefore, see, on the face of it, you would understand that it means that the people had crossed and the Kohenim stepped out of the river on the west side and resumed their position at the head. But Rashi is explaining that's not what it means, actually, in Mukdamum Uchamat Torah, because otherwise The Pasuk is saying that the Oren and the Kohenim went in front of the people, but it already says the people already crossed. So how are they going in front of them? So therefore, that's what leads the Gemara to this Jerusha that had to be like that. That they came from the east bank, and then they were flown across. Maharsha brings from Rashi on the Pesukim there in Yeshua that arrives at the same point by Daushining the Pesukim in a different way. But yeah. So, Valdova the Nanish Uza. Now, here's another digression that we're going to talk about from the story of crossing the Yarden. We're going to keep on digressing to talk about different other things. Though, for that kind of thing, for not realizing that, is why a few hundred years later, Uzzah was punished. So you have the story in Sefer Shmuel, and so in Sefer, we have it as the Haftarah of Parshas Shemini, that they're going to bring the Oren from Kiryas Yearim. So let's briefly recap what happened to the Oren in those centuries. So you had, after they came into Eretz Yisrael, eventually 14 years after they came in, they built Mishkan Shiloh, and it stood for 369 years. Then the Plishtim fought against the Jewish people and destroyed Shiloh and captured the Oren. They were suffering all kinds of terrible plagues as they moved the Oren from one Plishti city to another, and eventually they realized, you know what, the God of the Jews is obviously angry at us for keeping this Oren. We better send it back together with some gifts. So they hitched up cows to a wagon and had it bring the Oren back to Jewish territory. Comes to the city of Beit Shemesh. We're going to learn about that later on in the Gemara. The people of Beit Shemesh did not know how to treat the Oren with the proper respect, and a plague broke out, so they realized we can't handle this. So they asked people from Kiryas Yearim, a nearby city, to come and get the Oren and bring it to them. So the people of Kiryas Yearim come. There's a man there named Avinadav. They put him in charge of the Oren. The Oren remains there for the next 20 years. Meanwhile, the rest of the Mishkan, was set up in Noiv, and then after Noiv was destroyed in the times of Shaul, then it moved to Giva. And all that time, the Oren was not with it, which is why private Mizbechus were allowed during that time. Finally, 20 years passed. David is now the king over all 12 Shvatim. He's conquered Yerushalayim and made it his capital. His first step is to bring the Oren to Yerushalayim. So he, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he makes a mistake, thinks that the Oren should be transported on a wagon. What the nature of his mistake was, we'll talk about later on. And so they're bringing it on a wagon. Uzzah, one of the sons of Abinadav, is walking next to the Oren. All of a sudden he sees the Oren looks like it's in danger of falling, and he grabs onto it, and he's struck dead. So David realizes we obviously made a mistake over here. There's a terrible thing that happened, and he has the Oren brought to the house of Oved Edom Hagiti. Oved Edom, that was the guy's name. Hagiti means he had lived for a period of time in the city of Gath. And Divrei Yomim mentions him several times. He was actually a Levi. He took very good care of the Oren. He had exceptional respect for it. The Pasuk says he was blessed very much for it. The Gemara in Berachos explains that his wife and all of his sons' wives all of a sudden had six sextuplets each. So all of a sudden the family grew to an enormous amount, and all of them later on were Leviim who served in the Beis Mikdash. So David realized that, okay, as long as we know how to treat the Oren with respect, we have nothing to worry about. And this time he has the Kohenim or the Leviim carry the Oren the way it's supposed to be, and they bring it to Yerushalayim. So the Pasuk says, they come to the threshing floor of Nochoin. Simple meaning is that that's the name of the person who owned the place. The Gemara will talk about later, a drosha about that name. Uzzah stretched out his hand to the Oren of Hashem and grabbed a hold of it. He shum to a boker because the cows that were pulling the wagon seemed like they were going to cause it to fall. Different mephoshim talk about shum to a boker can mean that the oxen themselves are like walking in a shaky way, like out of fear of the Oren. So they had like an instinctive fear and instinctive respect for the Oren, and so Uzzah is afraid that with all that shaking, the Oren may fall, or it may mean that they're whatever. The point is, in other words, he figured the Oren was in danger of falling. So therefore, he grabbed a hold of it, and then that's it. Yeah. Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, not literally to him, he's not a Novi or something, but in other words, Hashem said, like so to speak, to himself, Uzzah, Oren, Noisev, Noisev, didn't you realize that by the Yarden, the Oren carried its bearers? Who wants me, like Kol Shekin, how much more so it can carry itself, and it's not in danger of falling? Now, there is an interesting point. Mephoshim discussed the question, was it always Oren, Noisev, Noisev, or only maybe on special occasions? When you get down to it, by the way, the Oren was quite heavy. The kapurus alone was made out of solid gold, and the Oren itself was made out of three boxes, and it had the luchas in it, which weighed 40 saw, and so on and so forth. So does it mean that always the Oren was noisev? What does it mean, b'derech klal, you had to carry it, b'derech klal, you'd feel the weight, but on special occasions, like the crossing of the Yarden, then it would be noisev. Whatever the case, the point is that Hashem is saying to Uzzah, you should have realized that if it worked by the splitting of the Yarden, then now also the Oren is in no danger of falling, and you being a Zor have no business touching the Oren. different before we should talk about exactly also, first of all, he's a Zodi, he has no business touching the Oren, and second of all, even if you are going to touch the Oren, it has to be through the cloths that they have at the end of Parashas Bamidbar, where it talks about them wrapping up the Kalim, or at least touching the Badim, and he was touching the actual Oren, the actual Oren itself. So the Gemara continues, darshining more of the details of that story. The pasuk is Vayichar Af Hashem BeUzzah. Hashem's anger flared at Uzzah. Vayakeu Shom HaLekim Al HaShal. And Hashem struck him there on the shal. Now the simple meaning of shal means on the threshold. But why would that be an important detail to know that the pasuk should record for us? So the Gemara is going to understand shal in different senses. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar argue what the word shal means in this context. Chad Omer al iske sholu. One says it was because of a matter of forgetfulness, that he was a shogig and he grabbed a hold of it. That again, he should have realized, as we just said, that the Oren can keep itself from falling. So al hashal would mean because of his mistake. Therefore, he was judged very harshly, and therefore he was killed there on the spot. If anything, actually, Eitz Yosef says at most what he could have done is, fine, you're worried about that the oxen seem to be going wild or whatever, grab them to steady them, don't grab the Oren. And by the way, that's why this is the straightforward reason why this is after Odah Parashat Shemini, just like Nadab and Abihu made a mistake and it cost them their lives, the same thing with Uzzah. V'chad Omer she'osa tzrochav l'fonav. The other one says that osa tzrochav in his presence. Now the simple meaning, the literal meaning of osa tzrochav is he did his needs, but usually in Gemara terminology, that means he's going to the bathroom. How could he do such a thing? We'll talk about it in a second. But first, how does that relate to the word shal? Rashi explains the word shal, one of the meanings of it is dropping something from a height. You have the word ki yishal zesecha, for example, that in the Teuchacha, your olive trees are going to drop their fruit and it's not going to mature. Or with shul yosa, you have the name for a baby born and the placenta that goes with it is called shulya because it drops out of the mother. So the same way over here, shal would be something that drops out of the person's body. Now, what kind of a thing is that? Is he going to do such a thing? And as Eitz Yosef says, if he actually did, wouldn't people stone him or something for the chutzpah? So there's a lot of different explanations. There are Mephoshim who explain that it does mean actually going to the bathroom, but they have different possibilities. For example, one of them could be, there's an explanation actually from Rabbi Yosef Shalom Yoshev that says that it means that when he saw that the Oren in his mind is about to fall, he partially was so frightened that he lost control of his bowels. But in other words, that itself was a mistake that he should have realized, he should have been calmer about the matter, realizing again that the Oren can carry himself and he shouldn't have even allowed himself to lose himself to that degree. Hey, another possibility, Ben Yehoyada says, you know, you have, for example, a halacha, let's say a person is not allowed to, even nowadays, a person is not allowed to go to the bathroom in view of the Beis Mikdash unless he turns in a different direction or unless there's a wall between him and it, etc. So now, let's say, for example, Uzzah felt the need to go to the bathroom, so he goes behind a wall. Fine, but nevertheless, when the Oren is around, even behind a wall is not enough. He still should have also turned in a different direction, and that's what it means, also tzracha b'fonav. Another possibility they talk about is that maybe in fact it means the Gemara tells us, so it's Yosef brings an explanation. The Gemara mentions in Bechoris, when a person feels the need to urinate, it's important that he does it right away, otherwise it can be dangerous to his health. So here, Uzza felt that need, and therefore, so he figured, look, la-locha, you know, you have to, but nevertheless, he still should have had more derech eretz for the Oren than that. Aside from all of that, though, there are a number of different explanations that osa tzrochav does not literally mean doing his needs as in going to the bathroom, but rather it has other meanings. For example, it means that he allowed himself to be distracted by his own needs, or even by the needs of the order, and that, again, he thinks that the order needs to be saved from falling, so he wasn't completely focused on other course, as he should be at a time like that, right in front of the order, and for that we're saying he was punished. So the pasuk continues by Yomos Sham Im Aron Harlekim. He died there with the Oren of Hashem. So in the simple meaning, with means next to. But the Gemara Darshins, Amar Rabbi Yechanan Uzza Bala Olam Haba. Uzza, you don't think he lost his place in Olam Haba. He actually comes to Olam Haba. The comparison is Ma Oren La Olam Kayim, just like the Oren lasts forever. Even the Gemara tells us in Yomer it was hidden under the Beis Hamikdash and it's still there. Ada Yemazeh Af Uzza Bala Olam Haba. The same way Uzza also lasts forever and his neshama is coming La Olam Haba. Maharsha points out, you know, that we just had a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar, what Uzzah's mistake was, what it means alashal, whether it means that he forgot, or whether it means also tzuracha b'fanav. If you're going to say to the sister he forgot, and the Gemara said Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar, chad omer v'chad omer, it didn't identify who said what. If you're going to tell us that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who said that it was forgetfulness, then there's not really much of a chiddush in saying he comes l'olam haba, because fine, he's not going to lose his olam haba for forgetfulness. It would be more logical to say that he's the one who says that also tzrocha b'fanav, and nevertheless that didn't lose him his place in Olam Haba, because there was an excuse for it according to the various possibilities that we said. Nevertheless, though, Marshall says that maybe not. You could even say that it could be, but not necessarily. You don't have to say that way. It could be that Rabbi Lazar is saying that also tzrocha, but nevertheless, though, Rabbi Yochanan tells us even according to that opinion, you should know he still has a place in Olam Haba. There is actually an interesting idea that Sefer Chassidim says on it, which is that Fakir, because he tried to save the order and his wife, he has a place in Olam Haba. Meaning, even though he had done wrongly, but the fact is he had good intentions, and that good intention itself won him a place in Olam Haba. A very powerful thing, in other words, that even a person does the wrong thing, but he has the right intentions, and that itself is a big thing in the Eibishter's eyes.
And was not grabbed onto the Aaron? Would Hashem made a miracle that they wouldn't have
fallen. Yeah, that's what we're saying, that the Aaron can carry itself, yeah.
The
so that was his mistake, that he thought that the Aaron is a regular gashmiistic object and it's subject to the laws of gravity.
The chance of a miracle happening?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess once he grabbed a hold of it, then the whole procession, he died on the spot, the whole procession came to a stop, so then there's nothing more. But derech hateva, that's, yeah. The pasuk continues by Yichar leDavid. David was upset. Ala sheporatz Hashem Peretz beUzzah, that Hashem had made a breach in Uzzah, and the pasuk goes on to say he named the place Peretz Uzzah in commemoration of that. So what's this word by Yichar leDavid? We would usually translate that it means that David was angry or upset. But Amar Malazar, we can also darshan shenishtanu ponav kacharora, means David's face turned colors like a loaf of bread baked directly on the coals. So in other words, David felt very bad over the fact that he had caused that because of him Uzzah had died, and the fact that now he realized he had made a terrible mistake by having the Aron transported on a wagon in the first place. Why the reason for the Jerusha? So one point is this whole Gemara more or less is also brought in the Medrash in Medrash Rabbah in Chumash Bamidbar, when it talks about the end of Parashas Bamidbar, how the Levium has to be careful, the Kohenim has to be careful to only allow the Levium to touch the Kalim once they're wrapped up in their wrappings and so forth. So the Medrash in that connection brings this whole story over there. So one of the Mefarshim explains the vort is if the usual meaning of Vayicha means to get angry. But what do you mean? David's going to get angry at Hashem's judgment? That's Tzaddik's not going to be like that. So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that it means like he's upset with himself. And therefore, that his face turned colors, realizing that he had done something really bad, basically. So Marshall also brings, by the way, the reason why such a loaf of bread would be called charora is because it's baked inside a chur, inside a hole. In the ground or on the stove or something. Yeah. So the Gemara asks, Elamei Atak, Yichar Hochanami. You're going to say every time it says in the pasuk by Yichar, you're going to darshan in the same way. Usually by Yichar means he got angry. The answer is Hosam Ksiv Af. Usually in the Torah it says by Yichar Af. So it means he got angry because Af, but Af literally means the nose. But whenever it actually explains in a very number of places, when a person is angry, his nostrils flare and he breathes heavily, and therefore it's the anger is visible in his nose. Except Af. Here it doesn't say Af, so therefore the Gemara can doubt him that it doesn't mean he got angry, but rather that he got upset with himself for having done such a thing and caused such a tragedy to happen. So we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more of that story, and in particular what David's mistake was. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Yodalad 7. The prophet talks about shoftim v'shotim, chitin lachol v'chol sharecha. You have to have judges and policemen in all your cities. So really, the true fulfillment of that will be in the by the gula amitis vashlema through Mashiach Tzidkenu. We have the prophet v'ashiv v'shiftayich kavod yishayna v'yatzayich v'atzilah. We learned a while back a point that the Rebbe makes in that sicha as well, or in the next sicha, that the law said, Lovri, we won't really need shoytrin because nobody will have to be compelled to follow the pesachim and based in, but then we're going to have the shleimus of that point of shoytrin v'shoytrin, law said Lovri. And in particular, the Rambam explains in the Hilchos Sanhedrin that we have a Kabbalah, that the Sanhedrin is first going to be reestablished in Tveria, and from there they're going to move to the Beis Hamikdash. So that's the detail of how we're going to have the Rosh Hashanah Shiftach v'Rishayim. One thing is, by the way, you know, you have so many times in halacha that you learn almost any halacha or any block gemara or whatever, you come across questions in halacha that are left unresolved, or that we have to do such and such because of a suffix, or we have different opinions of poskim or whatnot. You know, I think that one thing that you consider, you know, of course, when the Sanhedrin is reestablished, they're going to go through all that backlog of things and decide one way or the other. It seems to me that that would be something to have in mind, tackle when saying the bracha shiva shiftenu, is to daven for that. Once the Sanhedrin is reestablished, then we finally will, a lot of the sfeikas that we live with on a day-to-day basis are going to be resolved once and for all. Okay, continuing with halachas of Yom Tov. The dinim of washing dishes on Yom Tov are the same as on Shabbos, namely you can do them if you need them for that day. But you can't if you just need them for the next day. And cups, you have more of a heter for, because cups there's no particular time when you're going to drink. And then you have also details of what you can do in terms of hot water and in terms of sponges and so on and so forth. All the same dinim apply on Yom Tov as on Shabbos. And in particular, then you can't wash dishes from the first day of Yom Tov to the second, because in general, of course, you can't prepare from one day to the second. Okay. As far as turning on the heat, that would only be if it's very cold and then the food is freezing, so then tzarech ochel nefesh. Otherwise it would be also, you'd have to have it done. Otherwise it would be also, you'd have to have it done through a goy. You are allowed to use hot water, or to heat hot water, which is to say nowadays to use a boiler, to wash your hands and your feet and your face, but not your whole body. You would be allowed, Rebbe mentions, you would be allowed to wash one limb at a time. In other words, you can't take a bath or a shower on Yom Tov. As far as a baby, the Alter Rebbe also mentions that also you can't bathe him even in hot water that was done before Yom Tov. But in any case, you can't have even a goy heat up water for him. But what you can do is if you need some water for cooking, then you add extra, and that way you have hot water, for him. If the baby is a little bit sick, then you're allowed to have a goy. Then you're allowed to have a goy heat up the water for him, and you have a similar kind of thing also that it mentions in the Gemara as far as before and after a bris back in the day when they used to regularly bathe the baby before and after it respectively.
Yes, Shakala.